Jesus, please don't be mad. I know that it makes you sad when I simply don't obey.
Okay, welcome to Face of Appalachia, Hidden Stories of Faith and Values. This is a podcast where we explore personal stories of spirituality in the midst of a complicated culture. Central Appalachia has oftentimes been known as kind of monoculture, everyone's kind of the same, but we have a sense that's not true at all. There's actually some really gems of stories and diversity of people here in our region. So we look to dive in, listen up, and hear personal stories.
I'm especially grateful for our grant sponsor, Kentucky Humanities, National Endowment for Humanities.
Today I'm really excited for our guest. Janice is with us. We have full disclosure. Janice may live very close to where I live, and we've known each other from the real serious things like how tall is our grass and what are our kids doing, to other things. And then over time, as you shared, I've just really appreciated you as a mom, as a neighbor, as a community member, but also a person who's really, you ask hard questions, and you're really thinking about some stuff. Actually, I think that you really are a model of courage for me, of being willing to exploring stuff. So, but without that further ado, tell us about who are you? Tell us what makes you you.
Okay. I was born and raised in San Jose, California. I lived in the same house, same neighborhood, graduated high school, went to a junior college, actually a LDS junior college in Idaho, but I did the went away to school, came home for the summer, went away to school, came home for the summer. I am interested in psychology, social work, the social sciences, people, what makes people tick, why do they do what they do, kind of interests. Then I was 25, and I am not going to be able to afford to live and get a house. So I went back to school. I went to BYU in Provo, Utah. I wanted to be in business, but I ended up graduating in psychology. And back then, they didn't have human resources as a major. So I thought psychology and business might be pretty good for human resources. So I graduated in 91. I went back east to Pennsylvania, lived with a friend and her family, got a job, met my husband.
Okay, that I've always wondered how y'all met, if you were in the west and he was in the east, but you actually came east.
Yes, I came east, and this will be, he says, this is just a little tidbit story. I actually was the Sunday school teacher in our, they call it a branch, which is a small group of small congregation of young single adults. I was the Sunday school teacher, and Greg was the Sunday school president. He called me every week to remind me that I was supposed to teach a lesson. I feel like, well, of course I know I'm supposed to teach a lesson because that's my job. And I just thought he was calling to use that as a front to make a phone call. He says, no, I wasn't doing that. But I like to pretend that he was.
So he really made his move using Sunday school.
he will deny it, but that's what I...
You know the true story now.
Yes. So he would call me and say, this is Greg. I'm just calling to make sure you know about the lesson on Sunday. It's blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, thank you. I know. But then we would talk or whatever. And so that's how we met. And I love the beach. I love roller coasters. I love human drama stories on the typical TV movie, Lifetime series. My friends, we're down, we're beaten, we're fighting back. Those are my kind of shows. I love talking to my friends and dancing. And so those are some of the things that I really, I love Disney World.
Okay.
So it's very interesting. Greg and I are different. We got married in December. And it was New Year's Eve. And I said, what are we doing for New Year's Eve? And he said, we're going to bed. And I said, oh, no, we're not.
Yeah.
And so it has really been a good combination of, he told me once, sometimes I think your ideas are like crazy, but then we do them and they end up fun. So, and he has said, you know, we just did something yesterday. Do we have to do something to, you know, go out, do something today? And I'm like, well, that was yesterday. You can have fun or do something every day. So.
So you guys really are in some ways kind of opposites in lots of different ways.
Yes, we are. But we have really, it's been good because I've pulled him out. He's pulled me back. It's a good combination.
Raise up four kids, and now you guys are in a place where you're empty nesters now.
Yes.
What an interesting time for you guys' lives.
Yes, it is. It is interesting. It's, and we'll probably get into it later, but having been a stay-at-home mom, it's like, okay, well, that's the part they never talk about. Okay, I'm a stay-at-home mom, but I'm not dead, so what am I going to do now? And I haven't done anything work-related, so it's kind of, they talk about men retiring and how they struggle with what are they going to do. Well, it is real, retiring from being a stay-at-home mom. What are you going to do now?
I never thought about that way, the retiring from, because that really is in many ways like, that's interesting phrasing. Well, you know, you had mentioned something earlier. You said when you grew up in San Jose and then you went to an LDS, what'd you say, a junior college?
Junior college.
And then, of course, you got your LDS card really stamped when you went to BYU.
Yes.
So you grew up in an LDS home, Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints home.
Yes, I did.
I know people call them the Mormons, and they're not using that term anymore. But
right.
So you grew up as a Mormon.
As a Mormon, yeah.
As a Mormon. Your friends were Mormons?
Yes. I had most of my friend circle was LDS. Extendedly, my dad's side of the family, everyone was LDS. Mm. My mom's side of the family, everyone was LDS. My friends, LDS. I had friends that weren't LDS. It was different in San Jose. And I did not feel weird or different or anything, because there was maybe at my high school, we had maybe 800 kids in my high school, and maybe 50 to 75 were LDS. And so my circle was mostly LDS kids. I had other friends,
yeah.
But my social circle, very LDS, very, at that time, it was Monday night, you had family home evening.
Okay.
Tuesday night, this is me as a teenager.
Okay.
Tuesday night, you went to youth night. What they have here is Wednesday night, but there, it happened to be Tuesday. But it wasn't like here. I really like here how the schools respect youth night. I mean, it's youth night. But back there, it was just, I mean, nobody knew it was youth night. It was just something we did.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's like other families may go bowling. Well, we had youth night.
So it was really for you, I guess what I'm saying, what I'm hearing is when you were a teen, because both sides of the family are LDS, people you knew were LDS, a lot of your life rotated around kind of the rhythm of the church and what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Thursday night was youth sports night. Saturday night was the dance. Sunday was church. We went to a 6 a.m. seminary class every day of high school. You started as a freshman in high school.
Wait, you said 6 a.m.?
We got up at 6 a.m., went to the church. An adult was called to be the seminary teacher. So they would come from 6 to 7. We would have seminary, which was 1 year it was Old Testament, 1 year it was New Testament, 1 year it was the Book of Mormon, 1 year it was church history. And we went through, and our senior year, we graduated from seminary, and we graduated from high school.
I'm blown away. I mean, just the dedication of, for students to get up and go to class on time, period, and here you are earlier, and then you're going to class, learning about faith and the church. And
It was so ingrained and so required that it wasn't like I wasn't going to go.
Okay, it's just what you do, right?
Right. It was just what you do. Did we like it? No.
That's what you do.
But it's what you do. It's you go to church on Sunday. You go to youth night on Tuesday. You participate in all the activities. We had so much fun. There was a youth camp, and there was a dance festival where they taught all the youth the Charleston and the waltz and the square, and we put on a show and did, it was called Dance Festival. We did plays. I mean, it was really, I have no regrets as far as being raised in that social, I thrived on it, in that social environment.
Makes it a point that, so when you move from, you go to junior college and you go to BYU, and even after that, and you're shaping your adult life and you move east, the church is such a important part of you. Here you are, you're teaching Sunday school. I mean, it's just like what you do, right?
Right.
So when you went east, I'm assuming then that your social circle also was kind of based around the church. And
all the people in the church. I had my coworkers at work, but it was all, it was great because no matter where you lived, the church is divided like school boundaries. Mm. So if you live on this street, you're going to San Jose 4th Ward. Okay. It's going to be all your neighbors, and you go there, and you're going to get a church job, and you're going to meet a friend, and you're going to make friends. But truly, when we lived in Utah and Idaho, the ward boundaries, if you lived on this side of the street and you were in 4th Ward, and this side you were in 9th Ward, you don't even know these people.
Oh, wow.
It is so divided. I mean, truly, it is weird to think of it like that, but you didn't. If they were in the other ward, you don't know them. Your social circle was the ward boundary, and really, it was what you needed.
Sure, yes, okay.
Because, as a grown-up, my kids had the kids in their classes, they went to those parties, so very all-encompassing.
That sounds like, so then, you teach at Sunday school, and obviously that's what Greg slides in and swoops you in there because you guys are both involved with Sunday school and the teachings of the church. So you marry, not only growing up, but now here you are as an adult.
And we married in the temple, which is the process. If you don't marry in the temple, because to be sealed, for time and eternity, for your marriage to continue after death, you must be sealed in a temple.
So when you get married, this is not just like till death do us part. I mean, this is eternal.
Time and for all time and eternity.
I mean, that's a serious commitment.
Yes. Yes. You get married for time and eternity. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you guys get together, you decide I'm going to marry this guy. The church gives their approval. You get sealed in the temple.
Yes.
You start having some kids. You're raising up your kids. And you're raising them up in the church, the LDS church.
Yes. Very. I often say I was a very good Mormon mother.
Yeah. I mean, my first interactions with you were when your kids are making decisions about mission and they're doing
yeah.
right. And your kids are, a couple of your kids did mission. And for, explain a little bit. We're using the term mission, but like for people who don't know that, what is mission?
A mission is where when you they've now changed it to 18. Boys go at 18, girls go at 19. And what it is it you send in your name and the church tells you where you're going to go. You just get told. They call it your mission call. And you'd get told, my son, Brian was called to Londrina, Brazil. Mm. Kevin was Central Eurasia. And Jared was Guatemala City, Guatemala.
So,
and what you are committing to is that you will go to wherever you're assigned and live there for 2 years and try to bring people into the gospel, the LDS church.
Wow. So you really just, I mean, if you put your name out there, so I'm 19 and I'm Kevin, I'm putting my name out there, and then the church just tells me where I go.
Yes.
Wow.
And they have changed the rules since.
Okay.
Since they have changed the rules about this particular item. But when my brothers went back when I was young and they were 19 and 20, you went for 2 years and you could only call home on Christmas and Mother's Day. And you could only communicate by letters. So you were really gone for 2 years.
So when you send this is not part of what we were going to talk about, but now I'm really interested. So when you're sending your kids out and you realize that, granted, they can like call now or whatever.
Yeah, now they call once a week.
Okay.
And see, now they've, you know, a lot of those, the mission rules, I mean, technology has developed so much that it's really, what is the purpose? And it's not expensive. Like if your child, I mean, let's say my child was in California, even back in the day, it was long distance or whatever, but your kid has a cell phone on the mission. You have a cell phone. There was nothing preventative. And so they have changed the rule. And because everyone can keep in contact now, it was a mental health thing.
Yeah.
Back then, we were used to talking to grandma on Christmas because nobody called because it was long distance.
Yes.
Nobody, I mean, if you got a call from, because I grew up in California, my grandparents lived in Idaho or Utah. If grandma or grandpa called, they're paying.
Yeah.
And so either it's an emergency or it's Christmas. Or
yeah, I remember growing up and you'd be like, everyone has to quiet down because you're on long distance. You're like,
yes, like, yes.
Yeah, people don't know that anymore, do they?
Right. And people aren't, in my opinion, aren't built for that anymore.
Yeah.
So if you send your 18, a lot of boys graduate high school and go right from living at home to being on a mission. And so, you know, they're used to talking to their parents every day. And then, you know, it's like, well, no, now you can only talk on Christmas and Mother's Day. And there's a big joke, well, why isn't it Father's Day? But so now it's not as difficult. You FaceTime every day. Like, they changed it from the time when Kevin went.
Okay.
Kevin and Jared are 2.5 years apart, and they changed it in that time.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, obviously the church, the LDS church, has such a focus on family. I mean, it, like you say, even eternity is shaped by the vision of family and all that. But then at 18 or 19, your kids are expected to go on mission, leave home for the sake of the church, for the sake of the gospel. Was that hard as a parent?
No, it was ridiculously hard. And I knew, you know, they never talk about that.
Mm.
They never talk about, all you ever hear growing up is, oh, we're so proud of Jeff. He just left on his mission. We know that's where he's supposed to be, blah, blah, you know. And you don't think about that because it's not acceptable to say, oh, I am missing my child. This is terrible. I'm crying at night because I haven't talked to him. And that's a negative. You need to be supportive, and you need, because you know, they call, one of the things that they say is it's a tithe. You give up 2 years of your life, like you give up 10% of your money.
Oh.
So it's a tithe. You're tithing your time and service.
Okay.
And so it's expected.
Yeah, and then for parents or children, depending on who's struggling with the separation, maybe both, it's just, this is your service to God. This is what you do. We all are doing this. Now, did you ever have a sense that you were going to do mission or be a part of that?
No. Back in the day, I graduated high school in 1982.
Okay.
And back then, this is terrible, but this is what it was. The only girls that went on missions were, if you weren't married and you were 24 or 25, well, you might as well go on a mission.
Okay.
So nobody thought of going on missions. So boys went on missions, girls got married.
Okay.
So now it's very, very common for girls to go, but that is a change.
So really, in your lifetime, you're a really good example of the changes in the church, how they do mission. You've just seen a lot of change in your
yes.
time. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, Greg went on his mission to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That's the connection to Temple University. And when he was 19 and 20, the boys' missions were only 18 months.
Oh, okay.
But they did that just for a small time and then switched it back to 2 years.
So that's what leads, because your husband, too, is out west. He's a Westerner. And then he gets
his call.
He goes to Philadelphia. He connects, likes Philly or whatever, goes to Temple. And that's when you meet him, when he's...
Well, so he's on his mission. He comes back. He goes to Idaho State. He graduates, is going to go to graduate school. Thinks of Temple University because he loves it in Philadelphia. I mean, he loves Philadelphia. So he went to Philadelphia. I graduated from BYU, went to Pennsylvania, stayed at my friend's with her parents. We met in the church there.
Wow.
And so yeah, it's really pretty. So that's why his mission call was to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, again, another way the church has shaped your life.
The church has 100% absolutely informed all of my life decisions and all of my choices.
That is a dramatic statement. I mean, just that the church has shaped everything.
Well, I mean, I used to say this to my children. Okay, you're going to, you know, you'll turn 12 and then you'll get the Aaronic priest, you'll join scouts and you'll get the Aaronic priesthood. Then you'll turn 14 and you'll get to go to the dances. Then you'll turn 16 and you get your driver's license and you'll become a priest in the Aaronic priesthood. You'll graduate high school. You'll go on your mission. You'll get married in the temple. You'll have a baby, not any time before you're married. You'll have a baby. You'll go to college. I mean,
everything is the church.
Yes. And I used to say that. All of these milestones.
Yeah, okay.
You get your license, your driver's license. Someone not in the church. You know, you start high school. You get your driver's license. You graduate high school. You go to college or a trade. You get your first job. You know, whatever your, you know, you meet your spouse. You know, just this is the plan.
Yeah, it's how you kind of shape time. So, because your life is shaped by the church and the rhythm of the church and all this kind of stuff. But I'm talking to you today, and you are now not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I am a member on the books.
Okay.
I am a member. What I am is what they call inactive.
Okay, so you're inactive, which feels like a big thing.
Being inactive in the church, I think will be an interesting now that you know about time and all eternity. So if you have a child who doesn't follow the path, what that means is they are not going to be with you in heaven. Mm-hmm. So if they do not do these, they're called temple ordinances. If they do not do these ordinances, then they are excluded from being in what's the celestial kingdom. And so if your child leaves the church, or your grandma leaves the church, or Uncle John leaves the church, that is a tragedy. Okay. Because that person is now, there's a statement, a kind of a thing in the church. It's called no empty chairs. Mm. People used to put little knitting things and put it on your wall, and it's no empty chairs. And what it means is we want everyone to make it to the celestial kingdom. We don't want any empty chairs at our table.
So, I mean, it's different if I grew up in a home and I'm not a Baptist anymore. I might be going to the non-denominational church. This feels very different. It's like if I step away, I'm not only stepping away on Sunday or Tuesday nights, I'm actually stepping away for eternity.
Yes.
So you have become inactive.
Yes.
And
yeah.
You became inactive, and when you became inactive, this is what I'm really interested in. Can you talk to us about that journey? Like, how did that happen? Because when you were all in, I mean, like, you are meant to win it.
I was all in. They call it a true believing Mormon.
And you were an amazing, faithful,
yes,
good Mormon mom.
Yes.
Like the church, good marriage, shape the kids, all that.
Yes.
And
met all the milestones.
Yeah, yeah. Click, 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 right? Except, pause, wait a minute. I'm going inactive. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. I will tell you the story.
Okay.
It is picture, if you will.
Picture it, Sicily.
Yes. I am at church on Sunday. The church has a program that it's called I Am a Mormon. Mm. It was a internet push for people to set up an I Am Mormon profile and talk about the idea was to essentially say, we're not so weird. We're your everyday person. We're this, we're that, da 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 da. And, you know, just introduce yourself. And so, because a lot of people, especially in Pikeville and in other places that aren't as LDS dominant, they don't even know about LDS people. Mm-hmm. They've heard things, crazy things. They have a million wives. You know, they don't know. And so the point of this program was to put out, you know, we're regular people.
Okay.
And so, church on Sunday, they say, I'd like to encourage everyone to get on YouTube and create your I Am Mormon profile. So, that afternoon at home, I decided I should get on YouTube and create a Mormon profile. Well, there was a person on, there is also a program that's called I Am Ex-Mormon.
Oh.
And so these are people that do their profiles and talk about being ex-Mormon and tell their stories. Mm. I Am Ex-Mormon. And so they're still on YouTube. Both of those things are on YouTube if you ever want to look. So I listened to one on YouTube. And she was a regular lady and very similar to me. She left the church as an older person. And she left the church. Mm-hmm. And so I decided there must be, she missed something.
Yeah, right, yeah.
She missed something. I am going to prove her wrong.
Okay, so it started with, I'm going to prove this lady wrong.
That's exactly how it started.
Okay.
I am going to prove her wrong. One of the things in the church is that you're not supposed to read what they call anti-Mormon literature.
Okay.
I have had friends who have, LDS friends who have told me, well, your mistake was looking at the I Am Ex-Mormon video.
Okay, gotcha. Because that was forbidden. You weren't supposed to be prohibited, right? Yeah. Okay.
You're not, you know, well, you let that in. And so that is your error. So, but what I decided to do is I decided that I would look at historical information about the church by professional historians, people who have PhDs in history. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, if someone's area was World War II, you know, it's not Joe Blow who wanted to write a history book.
Yeah.
It's someone who is trained in history and how to do research, and they have researched this topic and written about it. Mm. So what I did was I chose maybe five various books by professional historians. And it rocked my world. The it was not what I had been taught.
Wow. So for the first time, and you are roughly about how old when this is happening?
48.
So you're 48. So you've, you know, mom, well, I mean, you're well established. I mean, like, you are as taught and brought up as possible.
Every Sunday, seminary, BYU, taught Sunday school.
Yeah.
For example, one of the things that was a very difficult thing for me is there's the story, it's called The First Vision. Mm-hmm. The First Vision is how Joseph Smith got the Book of Mormon. Okay?
Okay.
They told the story. I know this story. So, I mean, I know it. What I found from these history books is, now my thought was, Joseph Smith is a prophet of God, a prophet like Moses and Abraham.
Right.
He got this, he wrote down his history of how this happened. So it's kind of a divine, you know, divine writing.
Right, you're right. Okay, yeah.
And he, come to find out, there are like 8 versions of how the Book of Mormon came about.
Okay.
And this one, it's called the 18838 version, is the one that they printed in the Doctrine and Covenants. And this is, they made films about it, they taught it, and it's really a polished, how are we going to present this story?
Okay.
And which, and I have said this, which is fine, but I did all of the things, and I had never even heard of it.
Okay, so at 48, you have these history books out, and then in just one example is the first vision, and you realize that there are all these versions of it. You're being told a polished version, and the idea...
Well, a polished... I don't want to say polished. I shouldn't have used the word polished, but because it is... It's, for example, the very, very first account was Joseph Smith went into the forest, prayed to be forgiven for his sins, and he saw one angel.
Okay.
And he was forgiven for his sins. And that is the very first version.
Okay.
The one that they tell in church is Joseph Smith wanted to know which church to join.
Yeah.
So he went and he prayed to find out what church to join. He saw 2 personages in the shape of men. One was God and one was Jesus. And they told him not to join any church, and that they were going to, he's the prophet, and he is going to restore the church.
Okay.
That is why the difference in the Trinity.
Okay. So one of the big distinctions. So 48, that's, you now learn, wait a minute, like I didn't know. Anyone should know, like, I should have known. I've done the seminary, I've done the Sunday school, like, so I'm assuming then that leads you down kind of a rabbit trail.
So there's various things like that. I could give you more examples, or if we're short on time,
so I'm curious, so that, like, that leads down a rabbit trail. So you start going headlong into researching, like,
I was obsessed. I tend to do this on different items. I get caught on something. I'm super interested in it. I spend all my time looking at it.
Okay.
To the demise of other things.
Tunnel vision
is like perfect.
Yeah,
yes.
So you got the books. You're starting to look. And then how long a journey was that, like, starting
it to was probably it was probably 6 months.
Okay. So the next
and
six months,
I was you're in it. I threw books across the room.
Wow.
Every time Greg came home, I was, did you know this? Did you know this? Did you know this? And it was hard because he wasn't researching. Mm-hmm. You know, people back, you know, people are like happy in their in their spot. Uh-huh. And so, and granted, now his wife's angry. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, it was terrible. So I was emotionally wrecked.
Yeah, that's like, I have the image of just being wrecked. And then, but for you, you said something that's very interesting. You were angry.
I was angry.
Yeah.
I was angry because they lied.
Okay, so in this research, that's what stands out to you. It's like, I have been lied to. Okay, that's so heavy. So you're angry, you feel lied to. So you're studying for 6 months.
And I am just, it's terrible.
Yeah.
One night, I couldn't sleep. My whole life.
That's all 48 years been shaped by this.
Yes. And the minute I let the thought come into my mind, what if it's not true?
Mm. Wow.
What if it's not true? Which it was months and months, because that was my problem. How could I know all of these things that are true? I've had all of these experiences.
Right.
Why didn't my dad tell me?
Yeah.
All of these things. So it wasn't, it was what's wrong with me?
Oh, okay.
And what am I not seeing? Because it's true.
So I must be the problem as opposed to it.
Right. Right. So I am the, because when they, in the church, you pray to find out if the church is true. You are supposed to receive a spiritual confirmation. A spiritual confirmation. It's not, if you don't get one, it's not you didn't get one. It's you must be sinning. You must not be worthy enough. You must not be reading your scriptures enough. You need to go back and continue praying until you get that answer.
Okay.
So it was never, it could be wrong.
Right, because you literally have to shape your life around it. So even if your insights or whatever, you have to correct the insights to make sure you conform. And I don't mean that in a bad way, it's just the way the system works.
That's this, yes.
So here you are, I mean, you're angry, you feel alive, you got, I'm hearing a little bit of like shame, you feel like you're just, something must be wrong about you.
Yes, for a while, I am telling my closest friends, did you know there were 8 versions of the first vision, not the one that's in the thing? No. Did you know? And this was another big one. They said that Joseph Smith translated the Golden Plates mm-hmm. and created the Book of Mormon.
Right.
They have pictures of all the process. And so this is how they do it. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, in the actual history, he had a seer stone, you know, back in the 1800s, there was a lot of like a divining rod and a seer stone, different kind of, I don't know what the word is. I don't want to say like mumbo jumbo, but like, I don't know, foolish things. Like we used to think that this person was a witch because they did this and this.
It was a very spiritual type. time. Yeah.
Yes. This, if I do this and hold, if I have this defining rod and I hold this up, then I get this spiritual message, and it's all the rod.
Yeah.
Well, one of those things was seer stones. Mm-hmm. And what Joseph Smith actually said, and his wife said, is that he put the seer stone in a hat, put his face into the hat, and words from the Book of Words that were from the plates were coming up on the rock.
Right, okay.
And he was dictating, mm-hmm. and the other guy was writing it down. Mm-hmm. Okay? That is what it was. Not how the songs we sang in primary, which was the grade school youth group, not about the primary songs, not the pictures, not the things that we colored, none of that.
Okay.
It was really, according to historians, he put his face in a hat.
There's a big difference between, you know, person who puts face in hat as opposed to divine revelation. They just got a different vibe about them, don't they?
Right. And, yes. And so I finally allowed myself to think, what if it's not true?
I mean, just a dramatic, first time giving yourself space to ask that question.
To even allow, mm-hmm. what if it's not true? And I will tell you, the cognitive dissidence,
yeah.
all of that, it's not true. That explains it.
So things kind of start falling in line, right? The puzzle starts clicking together. And
it makes sense.
You know, a lot of people, most people I know, at that moment, shut it off, close the door, and say, I'm not going to allow myself to think about that anymore because that upsets too much of my life and flips the apple cart over, right? So I'm just going to, like, never say that again. We're never going to talk about that again. I'm just going to put it away, and I'm going to move forward and keep doing my thing.
Right. Right. Which I tried.
Okay, so you tried that.
Yes. Because every person I know.
Yeah, your whole world.
My whole world. Everything. Okay, well, I just can't. It's too big of a risk.
Yes. Yeah.
It's too risky.
Very much.
Too risky. I'm not going to do it.
So while you're doing this, though, so like as you're looking at the books and all that, you're obviously you're talking to your husband. Are you talking to other family members?
Well, it's taboo.
Okay, so maybe you're a little bit.
No, I'm talking to my closest girlfriends.
Okay.
Greg.
Gotcha. So husband, closest friends. No one else knows you're on this journey.
Right. And any person that I'm talking to the people that I would share intimate details about my life with.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because it's, and I tried talking to some people, and it's, they feel sorry for you.
Oh.
You've done something wrong. You're not going to have a seat at the table.
Yeah, sure.
What you just don't want to live the tenants. You're just lazy.
Mm.
That is how you're portrayed if you leave the church. You're deceived. I had my very, very closest friend tell me, you're deceived by the devil.
Well, okay. So it moves from, you know, like, oh, wow, you've made an exploration, you made this discovery, but it's probably not true, to like, no, actually, you're being deceived by the devil. Huge shift.
Because it's taught, it's the idea in the church is there's the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and the devil is a very real person. And that person does not want you to achieve in the church and go to the highest level of heaven. So he's tempting you.
Yeah.
So I had succumbed to the temptations and was being deceived because I, you know, and one of the, I'm talking about it now, but this is so emotionally driven.
Yeah.
I mean, I told, you know, I said, I did not do anything wrong. I searched for it to be true.
And you searched. You were trying to prove somebody else wrong.
Yes. I say, I didn't leave the church. The church left me.
That's a big... obviously, clearly, some people would have a really hard time with that kind of statement, that kind of phrasing.
Yes.
So you feel like the church left you, and only the intimate, most intimate people in your life know that you're even questioning it.
Because it's... So all of this time, I'm taking my kids to their church activities, I'm going to church, I'm doing...
On the surface, everything looks like normal, like you're just doing the...
Doing my life.
Yeah. When did you get to the place where you could, like, maybe not go to the church service anymore, or when your kids knew that you might not be in it anymore?
It was, this may be of interest to you, right at this time we moved to Pikeville.
Oh.
So 2012, 2013.
So you have a big life change. Y'all are moving here.
Yes. So what Greg and I decided is that... We had just moved our family from West Coast, Western kids to Southern Pikeville kids. I went to church because their lives were already upset. And this kind of goes to what about being a mother.
Sure.
We had all teenage kids who we had just moved. We were raising them exactly how I was raised.
Yeah.
So I went to church. Greg knew. I didn't say anything to the kids.
Okay, so your kids at this point, because they're teenagers, you know, they're doing their thing.
Right.
They don't know that mom's in an existential religious crisis.
No.
But your husband does. So you guys move here. You move dramatically to cross-culturally to a different part of the country, different group of people. So here you are. Lots of things are in flux for you.
Right. And, but outside, we're creating the home life. I'm continuing to create the home life that we've had. And so, all of the things. Probably, 2012, 13, probably 2015. I say, I can't do it anymore.
So you did almost three years of playing the role, but kind of being checked out in your brain and heart.
Yes. And being angry.
Okay.
Being angry. The biggest thing is I raged for 3 years.
Wow.
I was so angry in groups on the internet, Facebook. Listen to this thing. Just all caught up.
But the internet became a helpful place.
Because
you couldn't talk to other people. You could talk to people
yes.
on the internet, right?
Yeah, I could talk to people in my same position.
Wow.
And so there came a point when I had to let that go.
Okay.
Because you cannot, as time passed, I don't look at those groups now at all.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not involved with that at all. I can get angry if I were to sit here and say, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, I would be very angry. But... so you have to, one of the things that they actually talk about in these groups of people that have left the church is that you have to leave that point.
Okay.
You have to leave the angry, bitter point.
Yeah, you can't sustain, that can't be permanent reality. That's
right.
Depressing to you.
Right. So that really is, that's the crux of the story.
So in 2015, you decide you're going to kind of step away from the church. I mean, you're going and mm-hmm. you're going to play the role. And mm-hmm. obviously, your husband knew already. Closest people.
Yeah, I told the kids that I had been reviewing my beliefs and that people know that sometimes in your life, you look at your life and you make some changes, and I've decided that I don't want to be involved in the church, and Dad knows about it, and we're together, and he's not super happy, but I'm not going to be going to church from now on.
I mean, it's one thing in that moment to say, and now I'm becoming a member of Scientology, or I'm becoming
right.
a Church of Christ member, or something like that.
Right.
But you didn't.
No. Nope.
You just stepped away, and you know, your husband and the kids get in the car, and they go on Sundays to the church, and you're home. And
yeah.
Was there any fear that, like, then things would, like, unravel with your kids, they would, like, stop going or anything like that? Was there any fear that way?
I don't think so, because by now, Kevin was a senior. I mean, I don't know. They went with Dad.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and like I told you before, how did you get teenagers to get up at 6 a.m.?
Yeah.
Well, it's what you do.
Okay.
I mean, it's what you do.
Now, are all your kids now, are they in the tradition, in the church now?
Two are in the church.
Okay.
One is out.
Mm-hmm.
One is kind of inactive.
Okay, so you got to get all sides of it. Two in it to win it, one completely out, and one's like, ah. Okay.
Yeah.
Which happens, you big group of people, so you
right.
have four kids. What an emotional journey. To circle back around to, you gave such a powerful image earlier of that no empty seat.
Yes.
That's huge.
It is huge.
And so now you...
And that... I interrupted. Go ahead.
Important.
The thing about it, the thing that is so, so hard, is I am on the other side. I understand where the fear is with the no empty seat.
Mm.
I understand why my mother-in-law is very upset, why my friends are very upset, because in their worldview, where I was, I have left.
Yeah, so, you know, if Janice 2025 was talking to Janice 2000,
yes,
you would have that, like, sad remorse, like, that poor woman's been deceived, like, it's terrible. You know, that.
Yeah, this might be informative. I have a lot of friends, but one friend who grew up in my neighborhood who's not LDS.
Okay.
We were best, she was one of my very best friends. In fact, she's the one who I went and helped her mom.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, so she is the only person, when I told her I left the church over text, she called me and she said, "What in the world has happened? What happened? I know you. Why did you leave the church?"
She knew how big a deal this was.
Yes. And because she went to a lot of the church activities with me growing up.
Okay.
And she knew. None of my... The one or two friends that I know, know me intimately, but all of my acquaintances, like, if you and I were in the church, you had known me. All of a sudden, I quit going. If you were the average person and not spiritually interested in things, you would never, none of them ever asked me.
Because you become part of that, like, taboo.
Yes, system, right? It is risky. Mm-hmm. What if I lose my testimony?
Okay.
It is taboo. It is sad. Mm-hmm. And you kind of gather the wagons.
Yeah.
And which was very, very hurtful to me, because I had good friends, and my friends knew me, and I didn't understand. Well, I understood because I know their mindset.
Right, yeah.
But I didn't understand. I felt like I wasn't worth the ask. Wow. Like, I know Janice. I know she's a smart woman. I know she's intelligent. I know she's honest and caring and loyal. Why would she leave? And nobody asked. Nobody asked. And so it kind of, it's like, well, and I tried to tell them, but if you heard of Plato's cave analogy,
yeah.
I was the person running back in.
Yeah, okay.
Saying, God, and don't, you know, that's scary.
The word dangerous is cute. Because it's one thing if you're like this fringy internet person that I don't have much commonality with, and you've created a YouTube video and you're just throwing the church under the bus, you know, that's easy to dismiss.
Right.
But here's a person I respect, has done all the right things, isn't by nature radical and upending, you know. That's like, I don't know what to do with that. Like,
Right.
So it feels very dangerous. It's like, I can't go down that road because what happens? That could happen to me too.
Right? Yeah.
To Janice, it could happen to me.
Yes, exactly. That is it. And that is hard because I love my people.
Well, but you told the story earlier as you're growing up and all that. I can tell there's still a real love for the way you grew up. In some ways, you know, with the church, all that kind of, all the memories, the dances, all the stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So now here you are about 10 years out.
Yes.
Still on the books, but inactive.
Yes.
And
the reason for that,
yeah,
a lot of people are like, I don't want any association with that. I'm out. My opinion is this. I know the mindset of those that I love. It would be hurtful to them, and I don't care if my name's on the roll or not.
Okay, so at that point,
it's my name being on the roll would be hurtful if I say, I'm removing my name from the records. That's a hurtful act, and I don't want to hurt the people I love. Mm. Do I care if my name is in the computer system? Not really.
Right, yeah.
I don't view it as that defines me.
So with that, if I can back to the empty chair.
Oh, yes.
Image for a second. That's so big for me in my mind. I'm thinking about how critical that is.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah. So now do you, as you think about yourself, do you in some ways see yourself as, like, now I'm that empty, or I'm that empty chair, and somehow I could risk all this for eternity, or how do you deal with that?
I have, and I am, this honestly is how I do it. Mm-hmm. I view it like this. God gave me a brain. if I get to the pearly gates and he says, she says, you blew it. You didn't stay in, you know, the LDS church is the right one. You didn't stay in it. You're out. I think I'd have an argument because I used my brain. I made my most honest, forthright decision with what I had at the time. And I wasn't trying. I didn't happen to the church. It happened to me.
Yeah.
I was not trying to rock the apple cart.
Yeah, you just set up the account and then there you go.
So do I feel like I have an empty chair in there? No. I mean, I think that they feel that way.
Yeah, but you don't
because
see yourself,
of right? the I don't see myself that way. No, I don't at all.
So, you know, I know growing up in a tighter system also, the view is that it becomes a slippery slope, right? There's certain truths you give up, and then all of a sudden you're going to end up, like, you know, beating kids, robbing banks, you know, being like this, you know, terrible, awful person, you know. But you know, I've been your next door neighbor. For 10 years, I haven't seen you rob a bank, beat a kid.
I'm not, you know, out and about picking up people and...
You seem to have lived like a good average, you know, good old moral life, raised your kids, you got great kids. So with that then, now, what gives you hope or meaning when so many of the things that like gave you identity and meaning, like what does that look like now?
Now, it was actually quite exciting. It was really exciting because for the first time in my life, what do I really think? Do I think the Catholic Church is right? Do I think this church is right? Do I think this is right? You know, what do I think? Because from birth, I was taught and believed the teachings of the LDS Church, which is really quite wonderful.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's happy. And so what I believe now, what is my purpose? Because before, our purpose is to come down to this earth, to get a body, to be tested, and to return to Heavenly Father and live eternity with your family. Can I fill that in on the seminary test?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I mean, I know all of the, they jokingly call them Sunday school answers.
Yeah, you know the Sunday school.
You know. So, what I believe now is my purpose is to truly love unconditionally those people that I care and love. That is my purpose, to show the people that matter to me love. And that's my purpose. If you say it, Christ taught about love, love thy neighbor. And to really, especially coming from the background of you have to meet these milestones, to truly love someone unconditionally, I think is a grand enough purpose.
I would agree. That's something that's a challenge for all of us. So, well, I really appreciate you hanging out, sharing a little bit of your journey. I know it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
We're talking about your whole life, but I appreciate your willingness, your vulnerability to kind of share a real personal.
Yes, it's kind of, it's, however, like I mentioned, there haven't really been a lot of people in my worldview that are interested. So it's kind of nice to tell it because there's the ex-Mormon side.
Yes.
And there's the Mormon side. And there aren't very many people objectively interested just in a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
Jesus,
you know?
Well, I appreciate it. I've learned a ton. And so I appreciate your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for asking me.